Today's article is super exciting. I'll OTRs. The ultimate take-home message, we have the ability to modulate immune responses and make them less damaging. The big three takeaways, what is the difference between prebiotic, probiotic, and postbiotics? How can we train the innate immune system? And how can we modulate inflammation within the immune response? How can we control it and reduce the secondary effects? So stay tuned, OTRs, for this episode of The Cutting Edge. So the real challenge is, how do veterinarians like us, who don't have the time, resources, or financial backing of a multi-million dollar company, who are faced with irregular work schedules, on calls, and emergencies, how can we facilitate our own personal and professional growth so we can continue to offer superior service to our clients while still remaining competitive in today's market? That is the challenge, and this podcast will provide you the roadmap to its solution. I'm your host, Dr. Eric, and welcome to Operators to Owners. Today's cutting edge episode is one that I've put off for a long time because I feel relatively inadequate in explaining it and understanding it. It has required me to honestly watch a lot of YouTube videos and refresh myself on immunology, and I will present the article to you. I urge you to take it with a grain of salt because it comes from within my realm of understanding, and that doesn't necessarily make it right. But I am excited to present to you today the article titled Supplementing a Saccharomyces cerevisiae Fermentation Product Modulates Innate Immune Function and Ameliorates Bovine Respiratory Syncytial Virus Infection in Neonatal Calves. Easy for me to say. I pulled this one from the Journal of Dairy Science 2020, volume 98, number 8, pages 1 through 16. Highly recommend you download this particular article off of Dairy Science if you have access. Consider purchasing it if you don't, or reach out to somebody that does have access. There are some really compelling pictures in here, some really interesting things that you can get visually. Even some of the graphs and things are well worth your time to procure in some manner. Now, before we dive in, we want to talk a little bit about the background of this paper. What's it based on? What are they trying to do? And the premise of this essentially comes down to heifer post-weaning mortality. The number one cause of it is pneumonia. If we look at feedlot mortality and morbidity, the number one cause is pneumonia. If we look at heifer pre-weaned mortality, the number two cause is pneumonia. So pneumonia in the bovine is a $3 billion loss every single year. And the exposure risk to the average bovine to BRSV is 50 to 100% of the animals in their lifetime in the beef and dairy world. This is a disease of distinct economic value worth looking into. And the authors have referenced several of these studies that have shown the importance of controlling BRSV and essentially pneumonia within the bovine species in their introduction. The other interesting thing that they talk about within the introduction is essentially the impact of respiratory disease and the fact that the majority of lung damage isn't actually due to the pathogens, but due to exuberant host immune responses. Essentially, it's like a gram-negative mastitis, where the tissue damage due to the immune response is much worse than the actual disease in and of itself. So with that said, the researchers' objectives here, and again, I should touch base, the researchers, I hope they forgive me for this, are Mahmoud, Slate, Hung, Yon, and McGill. I apologize for any of these mispronunciations, and they're coming out of Iowa State and Diamond V. But their objectives are to determine the impact of what they call SCFP, or this Saccharomyces cerevisiae product on immune function, and to determine BRSV's susceptibility after being supplemented with this product. Now, one interesting thing that we have to note so that you can be set up for this is that the Saccharomyces cerevisiae product coming out of Diamond V is actually a what they call a postbiotic, right? So we know we have prebiotics that are set up to basically populate within the animal. We have probiotics that are ready to roll right out of the capsule, and we have postbiotics. And postbiotics are essentially, we grow and ferment these this biome, this particular yeast product, and then essentially distill it down to concentrate its overall effect, processing it after it's grown. What they're looking at is what is the effect of doing this. And within this study, it's not a large study. It's not overtly high numbers of enrolled animals. We're looking at 24 total animals with 12 controls, 12 treatments, and they're being fed this SCFP product, which is essentially a combination of amino acids, organic acids, polyphenols, and lipids. Got some B vitamins in there. And they're feeding this product to these animals, this treatment group, those 12 animals, in their milk and in their starter. Now, the trade name, for those of you who are wondering, of these products within the milk is Smart Care. Within the actual starter is Nutritech, just simply so that you guys know. Usually I try to avoid trade names, but it'll be a common question. After they have done this particular treatment complex of essentially feeding from day zero until exposure to BRSV, they collected several samples. So they collected blood on days 1, 7, 14, 19, and then days 3, 7, 10 after the BRSV exposure. They're looking at all kinds of parameters. They're looking at circulating immune responses, phagocytosis, respiratory burst from the neutrophils, all of those types of things. But first, they exposed these animals to BRSV at day 19 of life. And they confirmed the BRSV exposure via nasal swabs. They did clinical disease scoring using the McGurk Calf Health Respiratory Scoring Chart on a regular basis. Finally, they did sacrifice these 24 individuals for necropsy, looking at consolidation. They also scored these lungs using this McGill et al. 2018 study, which essentially scores them on a 0 to 5 scale. And then they also did some PCR for pathogen viral load type stuff, as well as bacterial load. Overall, a very interesting, relatively simplistic study. They essentially fed the product to the treatment group, didn't feed it to the control group. Day 19, they exposed them, and then they collected a bunch of data along the way, right? Now, what they found is where the magic is, and it has been something that I've really been excited to talk about, because if you look at these Saccharomyces studies in humans, if you look at them in animals and across the majority of the species, I think I was talking to a partner of mine here, there's probably over 300 studies now in this general realm. It's very hard to find a net negative or something that hasn't had a positive impact. And that's very true in this study as well. The results from this study, things to keep in mind, they didn't really show an increase in average daily gain. They did show some starter intake increases, maybe due to the fact that these animals weren't as clinically affected. And then no impacts on overall milk intakes, but they did see clinical disease improvements, mild and transient disease symptoms in that treatment group versus kind of persistent, much more clinical disease symptoms in the control group. If we look at gross pathology, the treatment group had less foci consolidation in those cranial ventral lung lobes that we usually attribute to bacterial pneumonia versus the control groups, which had bilateral multifocal coalescing lesions. When those controls were posted, they had significantly higher scores, again, on those postmortem scores. And this is one of those areas where you really want to grab that study. They have pictures of the lungs of the control versus the treatment groups. Very compelling. If you're ever trying to get a client to get onto this product, they provide a great image of what you're looking at for a difference in overall reactivity of those animals. Additionally, the nasal swabs that they did during this trial showed that the treatment group had less viral shedding, which is very interesting from the standpoint of somebody who's doing a lot of lung ultrasounding and doing more calf consulting. If we can reduce the overall load in these barns, that's very compelling. There was a non-significant reduction in secondary bacterial invaders between the control and treatment group. But trending in the right direction. So again, another interesting thing as a lung ultrasounder to keep in mind. Now, I want to delve a little bit into the immunology here of what's going on, most specifically because of how this product works, this SCP or excuse me, SCFP. I'm going to get it right by the end of this podcast. So the interesting thing about this product is it does something called innate training. So essentially what it does is trains the innate immune system to respond less with neutrophils and more with the macrophage or phagocytotic type cells in that innate immune response. Super, super interesting. Really helps, hopefully, to reduce the overall damage. And it is really some of the compelling, interesting stuff. I hope that you guys might dive a little bit deeper into immunology after this, because I did. It's a rabbit hole, but it was really interesting to think about how this might actually work further down the line. Generally speaking, what they're discussing in this article was that BRSV severity correlates with the amount of neutrophils that you're going to find in that bronchoalveolar space. And if they looked at the treatment group, that SCFP group, they tended towards greater ratios of these humoral lymphocytes versus neutrophils in the airway. But at the same time, there was a really interesting effect of this is that there was no negative effect upon the innate immunity or the phagocytic activity. There was no downregulation in terms of neutrophil function. If you look at respiratory burst, that's actually increased in these treatment animals. Another interesting aspect was it wasn't like it downregulated neutrophils through the entire body. It simply downregulated them within the airways. If you look at the parenchyma of the lung, these neutrophils were at the same level as the control groups. So very interesting. And if we get a little bit further down into the actual chemical communication within that immune response, and we look at the pro-inflammatory secretion of that tumor necrosis factor alpha, if you remember that, as that kind of goes up, you get more and more inflammation. That went up in the treatment calves in the peripheral tissues, so in the tissues not in the airways, but actually went down within the bronchoalveolar space in those samples from lavage. So it's almost like a protective factor within that airway. Very interesting that way. Essentially, what it did is it ramped up the systemic effects while decreasing the airway effects. And again, that's really important when we think about those first facts they talked about all the way in the introduction, that the majority of damage from BRSV occurs due to immune response, not to the disease itself. And this is what they're doing. They're essentially controlling this immune response, where innate training, as the authors call it. Now, when I explain this to my clients and I'm trying to explain this product to them, I like to use the analogy of we have nuclear bombs and we have special forces in the world, right? So when we want to fight a tactical war, a targeted war, and that's essentially what pneumonia is, we want to really target just the disease and avoid the secondary damage. We want way more of these special forces than we want of the nuclear bombs. What this system does is essentially shifts our initial response away from that neutrophil, that nuclear bomb. Hey, there's something bad here. Here's a bunch of reactive oxygen species and things like that are just going to cause non-discriminate damage. And instead, we're going to upregulate these macrophages and the things that are going to actually phagocytize the invaders and actually downregulates the overall inflammation that we see. If we look at the overall cascade of this, it's relatively complex, but let's just go through it quickly. So we see an upregulation in pro-inflammatory cytokines in the tissues, downregulation of pro-inflammatary cytokines in that bronchoalveolar space. This downregulates neutrophil movement into the actual airways, into that space where, when we think about IgA, where that's going to align, ultimately due to reduced interleukin-17, not recruiting them in there. The author suggests that this downregulation of interleukin-17 might be due to the differentiation of those CD4 T cells into a type of adaptive response in which TH2 cell responses are basically triggered. So the differentiation controlled by that TH2 is less likely to upregulate neutrophils and instead causes a stimulation of antibody production instead of that upregulation and recruitment of more neutrophils to that particular infection. Again, if you really want to get into the weeds of immunology, I invite you to investigate this paper. I'm 10 years removed from the class, and I had to really do a lot of digging to really understand exactly what they were saying. But the interesting part, again, being at the base level, at the chemical level of our immune system, this particular treatment was modifying how calves recruited specific cells to the area. And even in some of the newer research off of this type of product, even causing changes in genetic expression, this potentially changes how these immune cells are activated and how they are working together. So overall, what the authors found is this treatment reduced inflammation in the lungs. The authors suggested that this cascade by SCFP essentially limits this interleukin 6 and tumor necrosis factor in the mucosal lining of the lungs, resulting in less interleukin 17. Now, due to that, there's an upregulation in CD4 Th2 cells versus Th17 cells. We get less neutrophilic recruitment in the lungs. We get less overall inflammation, which leads to less shedding, less duration, less severity, less secondary infection. Essentially, that is what these authors found within the study. Now, one follow-up question that I have for the authors that I thought would be really interesting is, I wonder about when we genetically select and we're selecting for health traits now, we're essentially selecting for cows that are really good at protecting against the main diseases out there. And the dairy cow are going to be mastitis, metritis, and pneumonia. Those are probably your top three. Obviously, there's much more than that, but those are going to be your highest prevalence. So when we select for health traits, we're essentially selecting for cows that are really good at reacting to those disease processes. So is this a type of product or a type of treatment that we might need? Because these animals are responding so aggressively to these infections that they can clear them, especially in the cow. When we think of mastitis, when we think of metritis, that's a mixed bag infection essentially inside of a bag. And we're selecting these animals that react really aggressively to that. Those types of infections might lend themselves a little bit more to a neutrophil type response. But in turn, are we sacrificing calf respiratory health because we've upregulated and upselected for these animals that are really good at dealing with these kind of mixed bag infections in a contained space? When we do that within the lung tissue, we get all of that extra purulent exudate and damage. And those things are much more important in the lung as it affects lung exchange, damages those cilia, damages much of the respiratory system's ability to clear the debris, allowing secondary infections to occur, allowing them to invade much more easily and cause much more severe pneumonia because we've selected for that type of animal. That's something I'd love to postulate or pose to the authors. But the overall summary, the overall take-home message from this study is pretty powerful. And as an individual who's, again, like I said, done more calf consulting probably in the last year or two because of lung ultrasound than I've done in the previous four, this is potentially an alternative type product, a non-antibiotic type product that I'm very interested in and have several herds trialing at this point. The take-home message from this is we do have an ability to modulate immune responses to make them less damaging within the respiratory tract of our calves, and potentially beyond that if you start to look outside of this study. The big three takeaways beyond that take-home message: first, there are differences between prebiotics, probiotics, and postbiotics. Is one necessarily better than the other? Do you need one more than the other? Not necessarily, but the ability of the postbiotic to be more concentrated versus diluted in what you'll see as the prebiotic and the probiotic potentially has a bigger impact than those other two factors and is worth considering when you're considering your source or your dollar investment for your clients. Number two, innate training. We can train the immune system to respond in a less destructive way, to respond in a more phagocytic way versus more of kind of that nuclear bomb or uncontrolled damage type of way. And that's very interesting that we have the ability to do that. Number three, we have the ability to control inflammation. And that, again, ties into the response we get. We have less free oxygen, oxidative species going out there, less oxidative bursts occurring, less overall damage and destruction to the overall airways. So overall, very interesting study. As I said in the beginning, maybe not the power that you'd like to see, but very, very compelling results, lots of statistically significant information, definitely worth learning a little bit more about and definitely worth diving deeper into the literature, Perhaps in the near future, I will review a study in which they did lung ultrasound as well as administering this product, because again, it's become a little bit of a passion of mine to do some more lung ultrasound in calves. But this article is worth diving into. If you got a little bit of a moment here or there, pick up this article. It'll only take you about 15, 20 minutes to read, but it's going to be really informational and will really get you thinking. So until next time, OTRs carry on. If you liked this content and want more, join our OTO community at otovets.com/Facebook. Also, check out our blog at otovets.com/blog. Please join our community for an active discussion about today's podcast, past podcasts, and other topics within veterinary medicine. Thanks again for joining us today, OTOers, and carry on.